I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Kreisler.
And this is the final edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
Libertarian Charles Koch spent at least $500 million over the last election cycle trying to put a Republican in the White House and a Republican majority in the Senate. The failed attempt had a shocking aftermath. Our Stonepeck has the story.
At a press conference in Wichita today, Charles Koch, the sixth richest man in the entire world, fired his younger brother David. Mr. Koch.
It is with great pain and sorrow that I am today removing David H. Koch as executive vice president of Koch Industries and demanding that he return his 42% or $25 billion stake in the company I inherited from our father, Fred Koch, and grew it all on my lonesome to 2,600 times its original size through brilliant market-oriented bribery, insider trading, and price fixing.
Mr. Koch, what's the reason for this shattering move?
David H. Koch is to blame for everything that went wrong in our campaign to save America from the dark cloud of socialism over the White House. Bad hires, bungled strategy, massive media overspending, loose cannons like Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch. It's all that fat-faced little baggy pants' fault.
But surely David Koch had no official role in the 2012 election. You made all those decisions.
I don't give a flying crap. Someone's head is going to roll for this debacle. $500 million for abso-friggin-lutely-zilch. We changed nothing. You hear nothing. Right now, the Koch brothers look like arrogant, incompetent, lying, impotent morons. And I don't like being called impotent.
From his 25-bedroom Park Avenue septiplex, David H. Koch responded.
Trying to purchase the White House was my brother's stupid idea. As usual, when it goes kablooey, it's my fault. He's always been this way. When we were kids, he had Dad build him a treehouse and a massive 1,000-year-old oak in our yard.
Oh, that's cute. It almost makes him sound human.
It had 6 bedrooms. The servants' quarters were in a different tree. The day it was finished, up goes Chucky with our 300-pound English butler Waddles to serve him milk and cookies. Guess what?
I can't guess.
The oak broke. All my fault. I should have warned him. Meanwhile, Waddles dies a grisly death impaled on a huge oak splinter. Actually, that part was kind of fun.
What about your older brother firing you?
Chucky is a delusional corporate tyrant with incipient megalomaniac dementia. He can't fire me. Deep down, this is all about Mom liking me best.
Really?
Yeah. When I was 7, Mom gave me my own golf club. Chucky was so jealous, he never forgave me.
Just one club, not a set?
Yeah, in Georgia somewhere. Augusta. See, my stealth approach to destroying liberalism is much more effective.
Well, how does that work?
Simple. Throw hundreds of millions of dollars at East Coast liberals, build them the David Koch Cancer Center at MIT, refurbish the David Koch Theater at Lincoln Center, give them somewhere their nannies can take their brats on a rainy afternoon with the David Koch Dinosaur Wing at the Museum of Natural History. You know, they call Governor Walker of Wisconsin a Koch whore. Okay, but Boston and New York are full of Koch whores.
Thanks, Stone. The final edition later interviewed several East Coast liberals at Lincoln Center. They agreed with Koch's assessment, saying that they frequently attended events thrown by the incredibly creepy billionaire, where they pretended to like him. You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. Visit thefinaledition.com every day for more sizzling satire with teeth.
Dear Penthouse, I'm the head of a large intelligence gathering organization in North America. I never thought it would happen to me, but there I was, helping Afghanistan warlords learn to maintain their own quagmire, when I saw the hottest biographer I'd ever seen. Oh, sure, I'd banged biographers before, but this one was different. She was authorized. I remember it as clearly as if it were a classic character in a current spy movie. Career Fall.
Hey there, sexy. What's your name?
Petraeus. David Petraeus.
My name is Broadwell, but you can call me Author Pussy.
Not the Author Pussy.
The Author Pussy. Well, if you Google Author Pussy, I'm like the third or fourth Author Pussy to come up.
What's your real name?
Broadwell.
Broadwell? That sounds like Moneypenny. What kind of name is Broadwell for a femme fatale?
Look, I don't have a lot of time. Why don't you give me access to all your emails? I hear your information's sensitive.
Oh, well, technically I shouldn't do this, but there. Now you have all the codes for all the weapons in all the military bases in the world.
Can I have your Facebook password?
No. Then you could get into my privacy settings.
I'll let you get into my privacy settings, soldier.
As a military man, I can't tell if you're speaking metaphorically.
Why don't you come over here and stick your throbbing surge into my gaping hurt locker?
Again, I may be a libertine, but I'm fairly unimaginative when it comes to innuendo.
All right, let's have sex in the back of your all-terrain vehicle.
And so, Penthouse, I am now embroiled in the middle of the biggest sex spy scandal of all time. I have to say, even though Author Pussy destroyed my career, it was worth it for what she did to my throbbing Afghanistan-Pakistan border. Signed, name and address withheld by request.
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. Visit thefinaledition.com every day for more sizzling satire with teeth. It's like Spinal Tap with minds.
Long after election night, she's still walking. Megyn Kelly began her walk of shame at 11:33 p.m. Eastern on November 6, 2012, and just cannot find the end of that Fox News hallway to her own personal hell. It all began when Karl Rove insisted that, by calling the election for President Obama, the young guns in the Fox News decision room had
shot early and premature.
Then a shocked Fox News audience witnessed Kelly challenge Rove, engaging in behavior that several experts said can only be described as journalism. And the walk of shame began. Megan?
They told me if I wanted to slay the beast, I had to start walking.
And walk she did.
It's been a nightmarish house of horrors. I just keep walking down this hallway and there's no end. I'm like the mom in Poltergeist.
She's made some chilling discoveries on her historic walk through Fox News' offices.
The dead guy John Ashcroft lost to, the Florida ballots from the 2000 election, and, scariest of all, the full, uncensored Bill O'Reilly sex tapes. It's not all bad. There are talks of setting up a Million Megan March on Washington to benefit leggy blonde reporters with limited journalistic experience all over America.
In fact, Kelly has walked so far, she's been declared the official winner of the New York City Marathon by Karl Rove. When informed the marathon was canceled, Rove exclaimed,
"Well, that's premature."
This is Tony Hendra. You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. Visit thefinaledition.com every day for more sizzling satire with teeth.
Welcome, House Republicans, to a new congressional session. First thing, we want to put together the calendar, so is anyone introducing a bill this session?
Well, I think we should, as a nation, really start to address global warming.
Boo!
Oh, shut up! Oh, for God's sake.
Congressman, this is a serious meeting, and we're only entertaining serious proposals. I'm not going to stand here and listen to a lot of scientific spew about climate change. Now, can I hear some real ideas? Yes, Congressman from New York.
Yeah, well, we just had a once-in-a-century hurricane on the East Coast last year, and then we just had another one. So we need money for flood damage and fixing the electrical grid and getting the subways back to 100%.
Now, that's more like it. We'll get that right on the calendar. Yes, Congressman from Florida.
We're having a little problem with the ocean levels rising for whatever reason, so we need money for seawalls.
Well, that only stands to reason.
It's actually too bad we didn't do this 12 years ago.
Yeah, what are you gonna do?
Anything else, Congressman from Texas?
Well, we got tropical diseases we didn't used to, like malaria and West Nile. Rain in dry places, all the weather's different. We're just gonna need a lot of stuff.
We'll make a list. Yes, Iowa.
We just had the worst drought since the 1930s. Incredible temperatures, 60% of crop production affected. But we have an idea. By a total coincidence, up in the vast province of Labrador, Canada, the permafrost just happens to be melting. This is a once-in-an-eon opportunity. We want to build a pipeline to bring unlimited water down to the Midwest.
Great! Now let's strike while the iron is hot.
That's a good one, boss.
Any last thoughts?
I have a bill encouraging clean energy alternatives to fossil fuels.
Boom! Shut up! Oh, my God!
Again!
Again with this!
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. And now, for the latest Hollywood news, we go to the Emmys with the Final Edition's Larry Zack, the entertainment reporter who doesn't know who anyone is.
This is Larry Zack, retired civil engineer from Dunham Resources, and I'm standing next to the red carpet at the Nokia Theater in Los Angeles. I believe the contract for this structure went to Clark Construction out of Costa Mesa, and we're here for the Emmys. Excuse me, sir. What is your name, and why am I supposed to know who you are?
I'm Randall McIntyre. I play the unemployed brother-in-law on It's Your Family.
On what?
It's a sitcom about three generations of the same family living in a motel. It stars Brooke Shields.
I'm not familiar with your show. Good luck tonight. Excuse me, who are you exactly?
I'm Kim Kardashian. I'm the star of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Are you kidding me?
Is that another sitcom?
It's a reality series. They just filmed my life.
And someone pays you for this?
Do you have any idea what a big deal it is talking to me? I have my own clothing lines, a designer fragrance. I was the highest earning reality star of 2010, and I am having sex with Kanye West. Who the hell are you?
I designed a treatment facility that provides clean water to the African nation of Cameroon.
What?
Good luck to you tonight. Crazy person. Excuse me, I'm Larry Zack, entertainment reporter for the Final Edition. Do you know where I can find a glass of water or a Pepsi or something?
I'm Britney Spears.
I'm sorry, I meet a lot of people. I'm not going to remember that. Excuse me, I'm Larry Zack, entertainment reporter. Who are you, and is there an open bar in the theater or something?
Well, I don't know. I'm not an actor. I just happen to be walking by the theater.
Wait a minute. Are you Don Sinclair?
That's correct.
Oh, my God. You designed the Rockland-Caldicott Dam up in Seaport County. I can't believe I'm meeting you. You're my idol.
Yeah, I get a lot of that.
That was the Final Edition's Larry Zack, the entertainment reporter who doesn't know who anyone is. Thanks, Larry. You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Since last week's election, minute analysis of the outcome has been done ad nauseum. But some analysts believe that President Obama's victory was decided by a struggle between two powerful new forces in presidential politics, cats and dogs. Bud Weevil is professor of pet psychometrics at Tufts University.
Well, actually, that's Crufts University. You know, pets typically don't concern themselves much with presidential politics. But in this race, strong feelings were stirred early in the race among dogs and their traditional opponents, cats, by the notorious Romney dog on the car roof story. Listen to this spokescat for Cats for Mitt, which we can understand thanks to Samsung's new translation software, Catatonics.
Our research shows that cats across the U.S. love that the nice, neat, short-haired human treated his dog like some Hispanic menial who had to travel with the baggage. Ha ha ha. We love that. Dogs suck.
Dogs, meanwhile, were outraged. Here's prominent dog blogger Freckles.
We dogs see the big white human with the little teeth as a brutal pet abuser. He threatens dogs' role as equal members of the family. It is illegal in 38 states for dogs to ride in the back of pickups. For good reason. Dogs are people. Cats are fucking animals.
By the way, we're listening to that thanks to Google's new Doggerel apps. And the Romney controversy fed into a larger issue already dividing dogs and cats.
Dogs are deeply concerned about the huge gap between the number of funny cat videos and the much smaller number of funny dog videos. This is an affront to our inherent adorableness and talent for slapstick. We attribute it to blatantly pro-cat media bias.
Cats, of course, have a different take.
There is no media bias. That is typical dog stupidity. The gap is part of an unstoppable trend. Cats are replacing dogs as America's cutest pet. Cats rule.
So the species gap between Kino Americans and Felino Americans had never been wider. For cats and dogs, the stakes in this election were sky high.
Is the phenomenon of pet party affiliation a new one? Candy Stick is a senior analyst at the PETA Institute for Anthropomorphous Research.
Cats have tended to trend Republican. They're finicky about grooming and bodily functions. Most prefer to wear their fur short. They're fierce individualists. They exhibit core Republican behaviors like taking pleasure in slowly killing small animals. Dogs traditionally trend Democratic. Except for licking their genitals all the time, they don't groom. They defecate, urinate, and have indiscriminate sex in public. They act collectively. Imagine a team of cats pulling a sled? Not gonna happen. Dogs are permissive, impulsive, quarrelsome, often long-haired. They whine when they want something, and if they don't get it, yap endlessly. In short, liberals.
Okay, you might say. But how do dogs and cats participate in the political process? Professor Weevil.
Cats and dogs form opinions the same way humans do. They watch television and ignore what's being said in favor of body language. Pets then translate their impressions into action to influence their humans. A dog barks at a candidate's TV image, bang. Goes that candidate's likability. But if the dog wags his tail at that TV image, licks it, tries to leg hump it, rides it, really starts taking a dump on it, that indicates different degrees of approval.
Can cats and dogs really have that much influence on their humans' votes? Ms. Stick.
Absolutely. Humans have an unwavering belief in the childlike honesty of their pets' instincts. Here's a video of a schnauzer called Max staring at Obama's TV image. See, he's getting a little boner. Now, here's a Persian called Mittens rubbing herself against Mitt on TV. Sound like she's in heat? Well, she is. She wants Mitt's kittens. People trust these responses. Pets are yes or no people. In a complex election, that makes voting a lot simpler.
So how did dogs, who, let's face it, are mostly a lot dumber than cats, push this election into Obama's camp?
Well, dogs are generally liberal, but they have an irrational need to bark at people of color. Could have been the kiss of death for Obama. Obama neutralized that early on by installing Bo in the White House. Like his human, Bo's mostly black, with some important white bits. Result? Even in red states, no barking at Obama. Exit polls of voters who said their pets influenced their vote showed Cano American support for Obama in the 98th percentile. Dogs won Florida, Pennsylvania, and Ohio.
Wow. And Romney?
Romney and his advisors just didn't get it. If he'd found ways to show Seamus on that car roof over and over nationwide, he'd have had the same percentile of the cat vote and won in a landslide. Instead, he read from it. Romney may be toast, but cats represent a terrific opportunity for Republicans in future elections. Take women. Women regard their cats as even more important than their reproductive rights. Get to their cats, and the GOP will get women back.
Speaking of women, let's give Candy the last word.
Here at PETA, we are outraged. Pets should have to go through these humiliating behaviors to express their preferences. The time has come to enfranchise Cano and Felino Americans. Thanks to us, cats and dogs now have basic human rights. Why not the vote?
Why not indeed? President Beau in 2016. One interesting footnote. Exit polls of humans who keep small rodents as pets, mice, rats, guinea pigs, hamsters, expressed overwhelming support for Ron Paul.
You are a fluke of the universe. You have no right to be.
Go placidly amid the noise and waste, and remember what comfort there may be in owning a piece thereof. Avoid quiet and passive persons unless you are in need of sleep. Rotate your tires. Speak glowingly of those greater than yourself, and heed well their advice, even though they be turkeys. Know what to kiss and when. Consider that two wrongs never make a right, but the three do. Wherever possible, put people on hold. Be comforted that in the face of all aridity and disillusionment, and despite the changing fortunes of time, there is always a big future in computer maintenance. Remember the Pueblo. Strive at all times to bend, fold, spindle, and mutilate. Know yourself. If you need help, call the FBI. Exercise caution in your daily affairs, especially with those persons closest to you. That lemon on your left, for instance. Be assured that a walk through the ocean of most souls would scarcely get your feet wet. Fall not in love, therefore. It will stick to your face. Gracefully surrender the things of youth, birds, clean air, tuna, Taiwan, and let not the sands of time get in your lunch. Hire people with hooks. For a good time, call 606-4311. Ask for Ken. Take heart amid the deepening gloom that your dog is finally getting enough cheese, and reflect that whatever misfortune may be your lot, it could only be worse in Milwaukee. You are a fluke of the universe. You have no right to be here. And whether you can hear it or not, The universe is laughing behind your back. Therefore, make peace with your God, whatever you conceive him to be, hairy thunderer or cosmic muffin. With all its hopes, dreams, promises, and urban renewal, the world continues to deteriorate. Give up. You are a
This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Kevin Janis, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Tony Hendra, Darby Worley, and just a smidge of Jeff Kreisler. It was written by Kevin Janis, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Tony Hendra, and a tiny bit of thinking occasionally on the side by that other guy. Our engineers for the show were Greg Russ and Giselle Hernandez. A special shout-out to the comedy classic of Deteriorata, performed by Norman Rose, backup vocals Melissa Manchester, music by Christopher Guest, lyrics by Tony Hendra. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a product of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2012. Do us a great favor and visit our website, thefinaledition.com. And more importantly, tell everybody you know about the Final Edition Radio Hour. We promise to send you a pony dead or alive. Have a great whatever you got.